Pete Linderman, foreman of the Salida del Sol ranch, rode behind John Stafford's buggy, along with Frank Morgan. It didn't take them long to reach the ranch headquarters. The place was brightly lit. A number of lamps and lanterns were burning, including inside the barn where the gathering would take place. Dolores hurried forward into the yard to meet them. She wasn't wearing the trousers and shirt and vest she had sported earlier in the day. She looked much more feminine now in a pale blue dress with a full skirt.
Mr. Morgan and Mr. Stafford, you are both all right?
We're fine, Senora, thanks to Mr. Morgan here.
Somebody tried to bushwhack him on the way out here.
Did the man get away?
No, he's in the back there, behind the seat. You better not look at him, Senor. He ain't a pretty sight.
Of course I'll look at him. I might recognize him. One of you men, bring me a lantern.
One of the hands hustled forward with a light. He held it where Dolores could see the dead man's face, which was relatively unmarked despite the bloody mess Wolf had made of his throat.
Dios mío. What happened to him? Your dog did this?
That's right. The varmint was already dying, though.
Yes, I see the bullet hole in his shirt. Oh, I've never seen this man before. He doesn't work for me, if that's what you're thinking. The rest of my men should look at him just to be sure. Mr. Morgan, Mr. Stafford, why don't we go on into the barn?
I'll see that your horses are tended to.
Maybe I better take Wolf with me.
Probably a good idea. After seeing what he did to that fellow's throat, I don't reckon any of us would feel too comfortable having him around.
With the big cur padding at his side, Frank went into the barn with Dolores and Stafford. The large open area in the center of the cavernous building had been cleaned and swept, and a couple of bales of hay had been placed at the front of it.
I thought you might want to have a place to stand while you're talking to everyone.
Three men stood talking near the hay bales, and a number of cowboys lounged around the outer walls of the barn. Frank pegged them as hands who had ridden over to Salida del Sol with the ranchers they worked for. That trio up front had to be the owners of the other spreads. Two were white, and the other was Mexican. All three were middle-aged and had the solid look of successful cattlemen.
This is Frank Morgan. Mr. Morgan, this is Ben Patterson, Dave Guthrie, and Augusto Lopez.
Frank shook hands with all three men. Guthrie hesitated a little before he took Frank's hand.
I've heard about you, Morgan. If half of what I've heard is true, you probably don't even remember how many men you've killed.
I never shot anybody who wasn't either trying to kill me or hurt some innocent person, Guthrie. I'm not the enemy here. I came out to see what I can do to help you fellas.
You vouch for this gunfighter, Counselor?
I do, and so does my partner, Claudius Turnbuckle. I know you haven't met him, but I assure you he's an excellent judge of character. If he says Mr. Morgan is all right, you can count on that.
All right. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, Morgan. But I don't mind telling you, I'm not very fond of the idea of a gunslinger being here in the valley.
Better he's on our side than working for Magnuson, Dave.
I suppose.
Frank heard the sound of more horses coming up outside. A moment later, Linderman came into the barn, accompanied by a tall, handsome man in an expensive Spanish-cut suit. The newcomer's swarthy skin and raven-black hair, as well as his suit, testified to his Spanish heritage. But Frank realized after a second that that was because of his resemblance to Dolores. Frank knew he was looking at Dolores' brother, Jorge Sandoval. Smiling, Dolores went to Sandoval and hugged him. With her hand on her brother's arm, Dolores brought him over and introduced him to Frank. Sandoval gave Frank a cool nod as they shook hands.
I have heard a great deal about you, Senor Morgan. You have quite a reputation. I won't ask you whether or not it was fairly earned.
I appreciate that. I get a mite tired of having to explain things to folks.
I'm not sure of the purpose of this meeting, but are we ready to begin?
Not quite. Edwin Northam isn't here yet.
Why should we wait for him? He wants nothing to do with us.
Perhaps not, but he has had trouble with Magnuson and the other oil drillers just as we have. And Mr. Morgan wanted to speak with all the big ranchers in the valley.
I don't have the time to waste waiting around for Northam. If you have something to say, Morgan, go ahead and say it.
Hold on a minute. I think I hear more horses coming.
Frank and Linderman moved to the massive double doors that stood open and looked out. A large wagon surrounded by riders had come to a stop in front of the barn. Like all the other cowboys on the Montero Ranch tonight, these newcomers were well armed, and from their hard-set expressions, they were ready for trouble. Two men were on the wagon seat, both wearing dark suits and hats. The resemblance ended there, however. The one holding the reins was short and slender, with a face like a terrier and a short, bristly, grayish-brown mustache. His companion probably weighed four times as much and loomed like a mountain over the driver. His face was as round and pale as a full moon, his thick lips as pouty as a baby's. Pudgy hands with short sausage-like fingers rested on his knees. The smaller man looped the reins around the brake lever and hopped down agilely from the wagon. He reached into the back and lifted out a set of two steps that had been hammered together out of thick planks. Despite his size, he had to be strong to handle the steps so easily. He placed the steps next to the wagon so that his massive companion could use them, then stepped back and stood at attention. The big man heaved himself off the seat, then, using wrought iron bars bolted to the wagon frame to support himself, he climbed down onto the steps and eventually to the ground.
Is that Northam?
Yep.
Frank remembered what Stafford had told him about Northam being a British sailor who had left his ship and settled in Southern California many years earlier. Northam must have changed a great deal since those days, because Frank couldn't imagine this behemoth of a man climbing around a ship's rigging. Northam seemed barely able to lift one leg and put it in front of the other.
Good evening to you, sir. I assume that you are the notorious Frank Morgan I've heard so much about.
I'm Morgan.
Edward Northam, sir, at your service. My manservant, Bartholomew Fox.
Howdy.
Fox's chin moved barely an inch in a perfunctory return nod. Otherwise, he didn't acknowledge the greeting.
You should know, sir, that I seldom leave my home. I would not have done so this evening had it not been for the personal invitation extended to me by the very lovely Senora Montero. Is she here, by the way?
Yes, I'm here, Edwin. Thank you for coming.
For you, my dear. Anything, as always.
Northam! Now can we get on with this?
I reckon we can, since we're all here.
Frank paused with Pete Linderman as the others all started inside. They went back into the barn with Edwin Northam lumbering along, followed by Bartholomew Fox. Frank couldn't help but notice the little man's military bearing, and he spotted a telltale bulge under Fox's left arm, indicating that the servant was carrying a gun there in a shoulder holster. Not many men in the West used a shoulder rig like that, but a few did.
Are your men ready?
All set.
The six ranchers gathered in front of the hay bales. Frank noted that while Patterson, Guthrie, and Lopez all greeted Northam politely enough, they displayed the same sort of coolness toward the big man that Sandoval had. Clearly, Northam was something of an outsider here. Still feeling a little odd about it, Frank stepped up onto the hay bales.
I want to thank all of you for coming tonight. And especially Senora Montero for agreeing to have this meeting here at her ranch. I reckon y'all know who I am. The reason I came here to the San Fernando Valley is because I wanted to lend a hand to Mr. John J. Stafford. Mr. Stafford's law partner, Claudius Turnbuckle, is a friend of mine. I knew from Turnbuckle that Mr. Stafford was having some sort of trouble down here, and I thought maybe I could help. Once I got here, it didn't take long to figure out what the trouble was.
Didn't take you long to kill one of my sister's ranch hands either, did it, Morgan?
That doesn't have anything to do with the problems you folks have been having.
If it had been one of my men you gunned down, you never would have left my rancho alive.
Jorge, please. Mr. Morgan and I have reached an understanding on that matter. Lonnie forced him into that gunfight.
As I was saying, it's pretty obvious that you've got oil wells crowding in all around you. That's bad enough, what with the noise and the smell and the oil fouling your water supplies in places. What I want to hear about is the rustling and the bushwhacking that's been going on.
Oh, well, my
men have been shot.
They've
been stealing our cattle.
Hold on now. I can't hear you if y'all talk at once.
It just that's true enough.
So helpless.
Then, one at a time, Frank listened to their complaints. It was the same story over and over. Cattle disappearing, cowboys being shot at as they rode the range, barns set on fire. Typical range war tactics, Frank thought.
The authorities haven't done anything to try to put a stop to this?
That blasted Magnuson flat out told me that the law was on his side. He's right, too. The sheriff claims he can't do anything without proof.
What more proof does anybody need besides missing cows and shot up punchers? I got two men laid up with bullet holes in them right now. It's just pure luck that one or both of them ain't dead.
The others joined in that chorus, with the exception of Edwin Northam. In fact, The big Englishman hadn't contributed anything to the meeting so far.
What about you, Mr. Northam? Have you been having the same sort of trouble as everybody else in the valley?
Actually, no. I've lost a few head of stock to rustlers, but no more than usual. Any cattleman is going to have a cow taken now and then to feed a hungry family of farmers.
This is not like that. This is organized, widespread rustling.
It is those oil drillers who are eating our beef, and they who shoot at us when we ride on our land.
Nobody's ever spotted any of the bushwhackers, though, is that right?
Who else could it be except them?
You haven't had any of your men shot?
No, sir, indeed not.
You don't find that a mite suspicious?
See here, sir. What are you insinuating about Mr. Northam, sir?
No need to get upset, Fox. I'm sure that Mr. Morgan wasn't accusing me of anything. Are you, Mr. Morgan?
I don't have any reason to accuse anybody of anything, just yet. But I intend to find out what's going on here in the valley.
Simply as a favor to your lawyer's partner? I find that hard to believe.
Well, you can believe this, Senor. Somebody's taken pot shots at me twice now, and I don't like it, not one bit. That makes it personal. That's why I intend to get to the bottom of things.
Surely a man such as yourself has many enemies. You can't be sure that these attempts on your life are because you came here claiming to want to help us.
Maybe not.
Frank signaled to Linderman.
Maybe one of you can shed some light on what happened.
Pete left the barn and came back a minute later, accompanied by two cowboys carrying a blanket-wrapped shape. They brought it to the front of the barn and placed it in front of the hay bales. Frank stepped down, bent, and grasped the blanket. The body of the dead bushwhacker rolled out on the ground in front of the startled ranchers.
Take a good look at him. Maybe he belongs to one of you.
You actually mean to say you believe this man was working for one of us, Morgan?
Was he? Do you recognize him? Do any of you?
He's no ranch hand. Look at those damn boots.
No cowboy worth his soul to be caught dead in a pair of clodhoppers like those.
It's obvious that he's one of the oil drillers. Magnuson sent him after you because he's afraid of you, Morgan.
Just take a good look at him. Do any of you remember ever seeing him before?
They studied the dead man's face for several moments. Then one by one, they shook their heads and denied knowing him. All the denials sounded convincing, but Frank didn't know these men well enough to judge yet how good they were at lying.
All right.
Frank motioned to Linderman, who moved forward along with the two men who had carried the body into the barn. They rolled it up in the blanket once more and carried it out.
Linderman tells me you got your own ice house here, Senora. I'd like for you to keep the body here tonight and see that it gets taken into town in the morning.
We can do that.
What are you going to do, Morgan? Just how do you intend to get to the bottom of this, as you put it?
Those stolen cows have got to be going somewhere. Maybe I can find out where. And if I do, that may tell me who's behind the rustling. Likewise, if there are any more shootings, I intend to track down the men responsible. If I can get my hands on some of them, they'll tell me who's been giving them their orders.
You seem quite confident of that, sir. What do you intend to do? Torture them?
Whatever it takes.
So you're going to be like a regulator?
That's just another name for a hired killer.
More like a range detective. I don't plan on killing anybody. Unless I have to.
I'm not sure it's a good idea to give this man free rein, Senora. Despite his claims, he's known to be a killer. You may all wind up in trouble with the law for turning him loose on the valley. As for myself, I wash my hands of the matter.
You would rather go it alone against Magnuson, Edwin?
If you'd ever served on a schooner caught in a typhoon in the South China Sea, my dear, you'd understand why Magnuson fails to frighten me. If he causes trouble for me, I shall deal with it in my own fashion.
All right, if that's the way you feel. But it seems to me that having Mr. Morgan look into things is the best thing we can do.
I agree, Senora. I'm sure you gentlemen aren't aware of it, but Mr. Morgan has served as a lawman himself in recent years. I know what sort of a reputation he has, but it's not fully deserved.
It's settled, then. Mr. Morgan will find the evidence we need to make the law stop Magnuson.
She turned to Frank.
I know you said you didn't want us to pay you, but...
What in the hell?
Gunshots!
Everybody down! Blow out those lanterns!
Gun in hand, Frank ran toward the open doors. A slug whined through the air near his head. Frank glanced back and saw that Jorge Sandoval had grabbed his sister and forced Dolores down behind the hay bales. Sandoval crouched beside her, holding a gun. The other ranchers had scattered, hunting cover, except for Edwin Norton, who shuffled slowly toward the cover of an empty stall. Bartholomew Fox backed along beside his employer, also with a drawn gun. Linderman dashed into the barn before Frank reached the doors. Frank grabbed the foreman's arm and jerked him to the side just as a hail of bullets scythed through the air where Linderman had been. They sprawled on the ground and rolled clear of the doorway as more slugs searched for them.
What the hell's going on out there?
Hail's the right word for it. Must have been 20 or 30 men open up on the place from the dark. Snuck up on us like a bunch of damn redskins. At least a dozen men went down in the first volley. Some of them our boys, the rest hands who rode over here with the other ranchers.
Frank nodded as darkness began to fall inside the barn. His order to blow out the lanterns was finally being heeded. That didn't keep the hidden riflemen outside from continuing to pour lead into the building, though. The cowboys who had been outside the barn were putting up a fight, but the firing from the defenders was sporadic and ineffective.
Damn it! Judging from the muzzle flashes I saw, they got the place surrounded. That damn Magnuson must have brought every driller in the valley with him.
I'm going out there.
Don't be a damn fool. It's a hornet's nest out there. At least in here there's a little cover.
Maybe so. But what do we do if they kill all the men outside and then set fire to the barn?
Shit. You're right, Morgan. Let's go. Let's go up, not out.
The two men stood up. In the flickering light of muzzle flashes from both inside and outside, the foreman led Frank to a ladder that took them up into the hayloft.
There's a trap door on the roof. If we can get up there without them seeing us, maybe we can pick off enough of them to make the others hightail it.
Linderman led Morgan as they climbed rungs nailed to the wall up to the trap door. Linderman and Frank crawled out onto the roof and hugged the sloping boards. Using elbows and knees, they pulled themselves to the crest of the roof and peered over it. Muzzle flame bloomed like crimson flowers in the darkness around the barn. Frank focused his gaze on the spot where one of the flashes had appeared and waited for another jet of orange flame. It was impossible to tell if he'd hit the rifleman behind those muzzle flashes, but as a long moment passed, he didn't see any more from that spot. A few yards away, Linderman's gun blasted as he followed Frank's example. Frank was already selecting another target. Again, no more flashes came from that spot.
We can maybe whittle them down this way, but if they ever figure out we're up here, we'll be sitting ducks.
Just then, Frank spotted an orange glare from the corner of his eye. He rolled onto his back in time to see the blazing torch that was arching through the air fall onto the barn roof. It rolled down a few feet, stopped, and continued burning fiercely. More torches followed, spinning through the air as they were thrown from below.
Hell!
We gotta put those fires out!
Frank leaped to his feet, jammed his gun back in its holster, and he ran awkwardly across the roof toward the spot where the first torch had landed. Frank kicked the torch and sent it flying off the barn, then began stomping at the flames that had already started trying to take hold of the wooden shingles. Linderman followed suit, scrambling desperately across the roof toward another torch. As soon as the fire started by the first torch was out, Frank hurried over to another one. A shot down below whistled past his head. With the muzzle flash still imprinted on his eyes, Frank palmed out his Colt and snapped off a shot. This time, the flame from the rifle's barrel jetted straight up, telling Frank that the attacker had pulled the trigger as he was going over backward. Gun still in hand, Frank kicked another torch off the roof. From the corner of his eye, he saw Linderman doing the same thing. Suddenly, the foreman spun around and fell. Frank wanted to check on him, but there was no time. He continued to dash back and forth, kicking some of the torches off the roof and tossing others, stomping out the flames that tried to flare up. So far, although the shingles were charred in places, the roof wasn't actually on fire. A fresh volley of gunfire blasted out, but these shots came from a different direction. A new group had entered the battle, galloping out of the night to take the fight to the attackers surrounding the barn. That proved to be enough to finally tip the delicate balance. Tracking the battle by the muzzle flashes, Frank saw it streaming away from the barn as the attackers fled. The killers had had enough. Frank threw the last of the torches off the roof, then hurried over to Linderman and dropped to a knee beside the fallen foreman. Linderman was still conscious and struggling to sit up as his right hand clutched his bloody left arm.
What happened? What's going on down there?
Those bastards who opened fire on the barn are taking off for the tall and uncut. We got some reinforcements from somewhere.
I had a dozen men up at the northwest pasture where most of the herd's gathered. Been trying to keep extra guards where the cows are. They must have heard the shooting and hustled down here to see what was going on.
How bad are you hit?
Not bad. Feels like the slug just
tore through my arm and missed the bone. I'll be fine.
Let's get you down off of here so that arm can be patched up.
Frank lifted the foreman to his feet. They went over to the trapdoor. Frank went down the ladder first so that he could help Linderman descend one-handed. It was a laborious process, but after a few minutes, they reached the ground in the barn. Some of the lanterns had been lit again now that the fighting was over. Dolores Montero spotted the wounded Linderman and ran toward the foreman.
Pete, are you all right?
I'll be fine, ma'am. This is just a scratch.
Linderman would have fallen if Frank hadn't been right beside him to grab him and hold him up.
He's lost quite a bit of blood. He needs to get that arm cleaned up, then be put to bed so he can rest.
I'll see to that. Some of you men, come over here. Put him in one of the spare bedrooms in the house, and then someone needs to ride to town as fast as they can and bring back the doctor.
Linderman wasn't the only one who needed medical attention. Quite a few of the men in the barn had been wounded. A couple of them lay motionless, and Frank figured there would be fatalities.
A man goes through his entire life never being shot at, and then twice in one night he almost gets killed. I don't know how you stand it, Mr. Morgan.
Never had much choice in the matter. Either you stand it or you give up, and that means giving up on life. I've never been in the mood to do that. Are you all right, Counselor?
Thankfully, yes. I got behind that water trough over there and stayed as low to the ground as I could. I heard a lot of bullets flying around, but none of them came too close to me. What in the world was behind all this violence?
Well, think about it. All the big ranchers in the valley are here tonight. If they were all wiped out, Magnuson and the other oilmen would have had a free hand. They could drill anywhere they wanted to.
My God, you're right. I suppose men who would stoop to rustling and bushwhacking wouldn't draw the line at a full-scale massacre. I know Senora Montero and her brother are all right because I talked to them, but we'd better see if any of the other ranchers are injured.
Frank and Stafford went around the barn, checking on the other cattlemen. Dave Guthrie had a bullet burn on his thigh, and Augusto Lopez had fallen and twisted a knee while he was running for cover, but those appeared to be the only injuries among the ranchers.
If I ever needed any more proof that I shouldn't ally myself with the rest of you, this atrocity confirms it. Dash it all. I could have been killed. We all could have been killed. Let's get out of here, Fox, before something else happens.
This doesn't change anything. I'm still going to find out who's responsible for this and all the other troubles you've had. Fact is, I'm more determined to do that than ever.
Forget it, Morgan. We don't want your help.
Jorge, what do you mean?
What has this man done since he came to the valley? Brought us here tonight so that Magnuson can kill all of us at the same time. Don't you see it, Dolores? He's working for Magnuson.
You got it all wrong, Sandoval. I didn't have anything to do with his attack.
You expect us to take the word of a known gunfighter and hired killer?
You know, Jorge might be onto something there. Morgan's the one who wanted this meeting. Hell, he brought us here like lambs to the slaughter.
And what is the first thing he did when he got here? He killed one of Senora Montero's men.
I told you how that happened. You can ask the Senora about it if you want.
Bah! You could lie to her as easily as you could lie to us.
Gentlemen, I assure you Mr. Morgan is indeed on your side. Think about this logically. He was in as much danger during the attack as any of you. Quite likely, he was in more danger because he climbed up onto the roof with Pete Linderman to try to pick off some of those gunmen. If not for his actions, the barn might have burned down with all of us inside it.
We don't know that. Maybe it was all an act, just to make us think that he's on our side. He ain't hurt, is he? Maybe those varmints outside didn't even aim at him any.
This is insane.
No. It's just starting to make sense. How did Magnuson know that all of us would be here tonight unless Morgan told him? I certainly didn't tell him. Did any of you?
No.
I surely did not.
It had to be you, Morgan. Everything is clear to us now.
Gentlemen, Senora Montero, I assure you that you are wrong. Mr. Morgan wants to help you.
Maybe he fooled you too, Mr. Stafford. You've been our attorney for a long time, and I know you would not double-cross us. But Morgan could lie to you too.
You're wrong. I just want to help.
We don't want your help, Mr. Morgan. In fact, we don't want you in the valley. We'll deal with the threat of Magnuson and the other oil men ourselves. We don't need someone who's supposed to be helping us betraying us instead.
You're making a terrible mistake, Signora.
I think you've said enough, Counselor. In fact, I think you and Mr. Morgan should return to Los Angeles now.
You're discharging me as your attorney?
No. As I told you, I still trust you. But I believe Morgan has fooled you too, and you need to think about what's happened here tonight.
Forget it, Stafford. They got their minds made up. We might as well leave. Maybe you can talk some sense into their heads later.
Very well. I'm sorry you feel that way, Signora. I hope all of you don't have reason to regret this rash decision later on.
Stafford and Frank turned toward the door of the barn. Dolores followed them out.
Have Mr. Morgan's horse and Mr. Stafford's buggy brought here.
A dozen men rode into the yard, among them Jeff, and Frank knew that they were the Salida del Sol hands who had rushed in from the north pasture to drive off the mysterious attackers.
Were you able to grab any of those varmints?
Nope. They gave us the slip in the foothills.
If your men had been able to capture any of them, maybe they would have told us who they're working for.
Or perhaps they would have identified you as the traitor, Morgan. So I'm sure you're glad they got away.
Frank just shook his head. It would be a waste of time, breath, and energy to argue any more tonight. Frank swung up into Goldie's saddle, and Stafford climbed into the buggy and took up the reins.
Hup.
They left the Montero Hacienda and headed back toward the pass over the Santa Monica Mountains.
I'm sorry about what happened back there, Mr. Morgan. I never dreamed they would get such foolish notions in their heads. It's a shame they don't want your help anymore. But I'll tell Claudius that you tried.
They may not want my help, but they're gonna get it anyway.
What? But you heard what they said.
I heard. But this ain't over, Counselor. Fact of the matter is, I reckon it's just getting started.
Nobody took any shots at Frank and Stafford on their way back over the mountains to town, which was a relief considering how hectic this long day had already been. When they reached the Nadeau Hotel, and Wolf and the horses had been left at the livery stable, Stafford and Frank entered the lobby, wearied by the night's events.
Would you like to join me in the bar for a drink?
No, thanks. I'm a mite tired. I think I'll go ahead and turn in.
Suit yourself. After everything that happened tonight, I need something to steady my nerves a bit. I'll see you in the morning.
Sure.
Frank claimed his room key from the clerk and went upstairs, again deciding not to use the elevator. What would happen, he wondered, if the blasted thing got stuck between floors, or if the cable that lifted it were to snap? No, good old-fashioned stairs were plenty good enough for Frank Morgan, thank you very much. When he reached his room on the third floor, Frank paused in front of the door and studied it for a moment. His jaw tightened. More than once in his life, somebody with a grudge against him had hidden in a hotel room, waiting for him to return so that they could shoot through the door at him. That had gotten Frank in the habit of walking quietly whenever he approached a hotel room. Also, he had wedged a small piece of a broken matchstick between the door and the jamb, low, close to the floor, where it wouldn't be noticed easily. Nobody could open the door without dislodging the matchstick. Now Frank saw the matchstick laying on the floor just in front of the door, where it had fallen when somebody went into his room. Frank had a pretty good notion that whoever it was still lurked inside the room, probably holding a gun. He knew he hadn't made much noise as he approached the door, thanks to the thick carpet runner in the hallway. He moved on past the room, being careful to proceed even more quietly now. The Nadeau didn't have balconies on its upper floors, but Frank had noticed a narrow ledge that ran below the windows of the rooms. He went to the end of the corridor and opened the window there. When he leaned out into the night air, Frank heard the noise of the drilling rigs and smelled the brimstone odor that went with them. It looked like a long way down to the concrete sidewalk three stories below it, but Frank had ridden along narrow mountain trails with yawning drops of several hundred feet only inches away. So he climbed out through the window onto the ledge. It was no more than 6 inches wide, but that was enough. Facing the wall, Frank began inching along the ledge. Most of his weight was on the balls of his booted feet, but the rough bricks provided a few handholds as well. He didn't look down. The tricky part came when he reached the corner of the hotel and had to navigate it. He got his right foot around the corner, planted his toe on the ledge, reached around with his right hand, and dug his fingers into the small gap between the bricks. Then he swung himself around the corner, holding on for a second with only one hand and one foot. He planted his left foot on the ledge and found a grip for his left hand, then paused for a moment to rest. Despite the steadiness of his nerves, his pulse was pounding a little harder than usual. When it had calmed down, he started moving again. He had counted the rooms along the hallway, so he knew how many windows he had to pass before he came to the one that opened into his room. The minutes dragged past. His toes and fingers were getting tired from clinging to the ledge and the bricks. But he finally reached the window that opened into his room, stopping just short of it. The room was dark, of course, since Frank hadn't been there to light the lamp when night fell, and the interlopers wouldn't have wanted to call attention to themselves by lighting it. Frank lowered himself into a crouch and reached for the window. The window moved slightly when he exerted pressure on it, so it wasn't locked, he told himself. He raised the window a fraction of an inch at a time, and then paused to see if there was any reaction from inside. The air was still and heavy and humid tonight, with little, if any, breeze, so he didn't think the curtains would stir inside the room. They had been closed over the window when he left, he recalled, so whoever was in there wouldn't notice the glass slowly rising. Frank took his time raising the window until it was up far enough for him to bend over and slip through it into the room. He quietly slid his Colt from its holster. The same wasn't true for whoever was in the room. The varmint was getting tired of waiting for Frank to return. As far as he could tell, the sounds he heard indicated that only one other person was in the room.
Don't move, or I'll blow your head off, mister.
Don't shoot, please!
Surprised to find a woman there, Frank was about to tell her to light the lamp. When something hit the broad brim of his hat and knocked it off his head, then shattered against his shoulder, staggering him slightly. Frank caught his balance and swung his left arm in a sweeping backhanded blow. His arm hit something soft. That didn't stop her, though. His fingers tangled in long hair, and he grabbed hold and swung her toward where he thought the bed was. She fell across the mattress. Frank holstered his gun and went after her, throwing himself on top of her and searching in the dark for her wrists. Frank grabbed her wrist and pinned that arm to the bed. A second later, he found her other wrist and clamped fingers around it, too. He had her pinned down now, although she was still squirming underneath him.
Better just settle down, ma'am. You're not going anywhere till I find out who you are and what you're doing in my room.
Your room? You're Frank Morgan?
That's right.
Well, get off me, a big stupid galoot. You're the man I came here to see.
Usually when somebody wants to pay me a friendly visit, they knock on the door. They don't sneak in and wait in the dark.
I didn't say anything about a friendly visit. I've got a business proposition for you.
If I let you go, are you going to try to hit me again?
You're sure you're Frank Morgan?
Last time I checked.
Then what the heck were you doing sneaking in the window like that? I thought you were some sort of assassin who'd come here to murder Morgan.
Let's just say I had a hunch somebody was in here who wasn't supposed to be. Somebody who was probably up to no good.
So what did you do? Climb all the way around the building on that little ledge under the windows?
Yep.
You're crazy. You could have fallen and broken your neck.
Could have walked right into both barrels of a shotgun, too. I'd rather choose the risks I want to run.
You sound like Frank Morgan, all right. Now, could you get off me? You're sort of heavy.
That depends.
On what, blast it?
Who are you, and what do you want?
My name is Astrid Magnuson.
You're married to Victor Magnuson?
What? No, I'm his sister.
All right, Miss Magnuson. You still haven't told me what you're doing here. But I'm gonna let you go anyway so I can light the lamp. You promised not to try to run away or wallop me again?
I promise. I want to talk to you as much as you want to talk to me.
She sounded like she was telling the truth, so Frank took a chance and released her wrists. He pushed himself off her and stood up next to the bed. The gas lamp was on the wall above the bedside table. He reached out and found it, then snapped a lucifer to life with his other hand and held it to the lamp. Frank saw that Astrid Magnuson had sat up on the edge of the bed and was running her fingers through thick auburn hair. She was around 30, Frank guessed, with brilliant green eyes. Mighty attractive, too, he thought, although at the moment she looked to be on the stern and angry side.
You didn't have to try to yank my hair out of my head.
I'm sorry, but right then I was just trying to grab a hold of whatever I could.
Oh, yeah. I noticed that you're rather free with your hands. You're not what I consider a gentleman, Mr. Morgan. But then I wouldn't expect a hired gunman to be a gentleman, would I?
Ma'am, I wouldn't have any earthly idea what you'd expect or wouldn't expect. But I can promise you, I don't go out of my way to be rude to ladies.
You could have fooled me.
Yeah, well, I don't expect to find a lady waiting for me in a darkened hotel room either.
What are you insinuating?
I'm not insinuating anything. I'm saying it plain. If you don't want me to think you're a whore, then tell me why you're here.
If you must know, I came here to see about hiring you.
So that was the business proposition you mentioned.
That's right. My brother needs help, and I thought you might be able to provide it.
The last time I saw your brother, he was mad as a hornet at me over a tussle I had with a driller of his named Hatch. He didn't look like a fella who'd be asking for my help before the day was over.
He's not. I am. And I heard about that fight you had with Hatch. The men who were with him on the wagon told Victor that you'd attacked them without provocation.
You sound like maybe you're not convinced of that.
I know Hatch. He has a reputation for getting into fights. If he thought you worked for that Montero woman, he's perfectly capable of coming after you.
That's pretty much what happened. What did you hit me with, anyway?
The chamber pot. Don't worry, it was empty.
I'm always thankful for small favors. Does your brother even know that you're here, Miss Magnuson?
Of course not. Victor would be furious. If I told him what I planned to do, he would have forbidden it. He's a very proud man. Too proud for his own good most of the time. But when he told me about meeting you, I remembered hearing your name. I asked around and confirmed what I remembered, that you're a gunfighter. I thought that if you really weren't working for Dolores Montero, as you claimed, then you might consider working for us.
Us?
Well, for Victor. He runs the drilling company, but I own a significant share in it.
Why does Victor need to hire a gunfighter? I sure as blazes don't know anything about drilling for oil.
Victor and his men can handle that part just fine. He needs you to keep those damn cowboys from sabotaging the wells and trying to kill the drillers.
The ranchers claim that same sort of thing is going on directed at them. Their men have been shot at and their cattle rustled.
What else do you expect them to say? They're just trying to divert attention from what they've been doing. Our men have been shot at. Derricks have been toppled. Equipment ruined. They're trying to drive the wildcatters out so they can have all the oil for themselves.
If you hired me, what would you expect me to do?
Put a stop to the violence directed at the drillers?
How would I go about doing that?
I'm sure I don't have to tell a man like you how to handle trouble, Mr. Morgan.
I'm not a hired killer.
I'm not asking you to murder anyone. But if you were working for Victor, you'd defend your employer's interests, wouldn't you? You'd defend yourself if you were attacked.
I always have.
Then you guard our wells. And if anyone tries to bother them, you deal with them, whatever it takes. Once those cowboys realize that the notorious Frank Morgan is on our side, maybe they'll quit trying to ruin us. Do we understand each other, Mr. Morgan?
I reckon we do. You've forgotten something.
What's that?
You said that your brother doesn't know you're here. That means he doesn't know you asked me to work for him. He's still got to agree to that.
We can take care of that right now. I can get Victor to listen to reason. We've rented a house here in town. Will you come with me to talk to him?
No.
I don't believe in postponing things that need to be dealt with.
I reckon I can see that. All right. Let's go see your brother.
We'll make it well worth your while. You won't regret this, Mr. Morgan. I brought a buggy to the hotel from the house.
Well, let's go down together. I'll fetch one of my horses from the stable and ride along with you.
No offense, Mr. Morgan. But I'd just as soon not be seen going through the lobby with you and leaving the hotel with you at this time of night. I have a reputation to protect, you know.
No, ma'am, I didn't know that, considering that I'd never heard of you before tonight. But suit yourself. Tell me how to get to your house and I'll meet you there.
Just take the main road north out of town. It's about a mile from here. You can't miss our house. It's the biggest one in that section of town.
By the way, why did you sneak in here and hide in the dark? Why didn't you just come up and knock on the door? For that matter, how'd you get in?
If you had refused to cooperate with me, I didn't see any reason why my brother ever had to know I'd been here. So I didn't want to walk in and just ask openly for you, because word of that would have gotten back to him. I came in the back and bribed one of the porters to let me into your room. Once I was there, I thought it might be better to leave the lamp unlit. You might have noticed the light in the window and summoned the police, thinking there was a burglar in your room. How would it have looked for the officers to come in and find me like that?
Sounds like you thought it through, all right. But you didn't stop to think that I might take you for a bushwhacker. What if I'd kicked the door open and come in shooting?
Well, that wouldn't have been very good for either of us now, would it?
I guess you're right about that. There's no one in the hallway. I'll see you at your house in 20 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. Now comes the hard part. Convincing my brother that you can help us.
They parted company then, Astrid heading for the rear stairs, Frank going down the main staircase to the lobby.
Going out again, Mr. Morgan?
Frank went out the door without looking back. Astrid must have told the hostler at the stable to leave her buggy team hitched up, because she was gone by the time Frank walked the block around the hotel.
It's me.
Well, don't you ever sleep, mister?
I'm starting to wonder the same thing myself.
Frank led Stormy out and saddled the rangy gray stallion.
Stay here, Wolf.
He didn't think he needed Wolf to come along with him to the meeting with Victor Magnuson. That would just increase the tension that was already bound to be pretty thick. Frank followed the directions Astrid had given him, thankful that they were pretty simple, since Los Angeles had grown considerably since the last time he'd been here. He found the place without any trouble. The house in the hills, just north of downtown, was the next thing to a mansion, a sprawling, steep-roofed structure with a three-story tower at each end. It looked like the sort of place where a railroad baron or a silver king would live. Frank rode through the gate and up a circular driveway to stop in front of a massive front door. He swung down from the saddle, looked for a place to tie Stormy's reins, and finally settled for looping them around one of the columns that supported an elaborate arched roof over the entrance. A brass knocker was mounted on the door. Astrid pulled the door back and motioned for Frank to come in. He pulled his hat off as he stepped into a fancy foyer. Astrid took it from him and hung it on a hat tree with a brass knob on the end of each curving projection.
Did you tell your brother I was on my way over here?
Who in blazes is that at the door this time of night?
There wasn't time. Anyway, it would have just meant starting the argument that much sooner. Victor is in the library.
This is an even fancier place than I expected.
It belongs to the man who's a partner in a railroad. He's gone to Europe for a year with his family, though, so the house was just sitting here empty. His lawyer was glad to rent it to us at a reasonable price.
Astrid paused at a pair of double doors, one of which was partially open. Then she pushed the door open the rest of the way.